And now live from Riverside, Iowa, the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk of the USS Enterprise, another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study. Your host this evening, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production. Now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I hope everyone is having a great evening, great afternoon, great morning, wherever you are on our beautiful blue planet. I got to say, down here in the South Woods, beautiful today, ladies and gentlemen. Gorgeous weather, had a little cool front come through. Mid-80s, sunshine, no rain. Oh, I don't know, I thought I was in heaven. But enough about the weather. Tonight's guest is going to be Yvonne Smith. I've had her on the show in the past. We'll probably be focusing more along the lines of abduction research, things like that. Types of aliens, stuff her or myself may have worked on in the recent future or past. So, you know, it's just one of those things we'd like to keep up with and trying to keep it flowing, things like that. Also, one other thing right quick I want to talk about before I give over to the news segment. One of the things that's been interesting lately is the shuttle. Have y'all been following the shuttle? You know, the UFO with the space shuttle. Everybody said, first, NASA said, well, it's some kind of junk. It's following a space shuttle. And then, you know, a couple of my friends told me, Joe, you heard about the UFO following a space shuttle. It's just garbage or debris. And so, you know, I didn't really think nothing about it because everybody said the same thing. It was some kind of debris or something fell out of the cargo bay and was floating along the ship. Well, today, NASA, in its infinite wisdom, says, what? What did they say? They don't know what it is. Not a clue. Not an idea, not a clue what it is. Think about that shuttle thing. That's been bugging me all day, too, by the way, ladies. It has definitely been irritating me ever since I read it. Well, actually, Linda read it and told me about it. I shouldn't even take credit for reading it because I didn't actually read it. Linda did. And she had told me about it, and I was kind of like, you got to be kidding me. Now, you'd think by now they would have some idea of what was going on here, who was doing it, or why it was there. Now, and what, 112 missions of the shuttle being in space? How many times have they been sighted UFOs? I think one out of every two launches, there's some type of UFO sighting aboard the space shuttle. Very interesting. Very, very, very interesting in the way that kind of stuff happens. So, yeah, I don't know why. I doubt they have any real care about, you know, the technology of our space shuttles. I can't even see them a little bit being intrigued by our technologies, because let's be honest. You know, the space shuttle next to a flying saucer is like a brick next to a feather. You know, it's just that much difference in what's going on. But it's one of the things that's been bothering me. I want everybody to think about, keep a listen for. You know, I know I got a lot of friends that work at NASA these days, especially since the new space program started. I got quite a few friends working at NASA these days, so I like to keep apprised of what they're up to and what they're doing and how they're doing it and who they're doing it with. You know, it does crack me up, though, because if you ever watch the movie Armageddon, when they're strapping him in and he says about a thing with 22 million parts built by the lowest bidder, I mean, that's a true statement. And it is kind of a scary thing when you think about it. You're strapping yourself to three tanks full of fuel, two solid, one liquid, and lighting them on fire and hoping for the best. You know, that's the same thing as going outside with a bottle rocket and, you know, sitting on it, lighting it, and hoping for the best. It's pretty much the same thing. So I do hope to see NASA develop some new technology, some new outcomes, some new outlooks, things like that. Well, you know, you got to give them some credit. It took them about 10 years to develop the Apollo program, 10 to 12 years, and it took them about 10 years to develop the shuttle program. So NASA can do it when NASA has the funding and the will. Now they have the funding. Let's see if they have the will. If they have the will with the funding, we'll see a new space program around 2012, 2014, 2016, somewhere around there. Most of us should still be alive to see it. So, you know, keep your fingers crossed, hope for the best, and see what happens with it. It does make me a little nervous to see us spending, you know, several hundred billion dollars in a space program. I am for it. I do agree that we should spend the money. But on that note, you know, I would like to know where the money's going to. It needs to be accounted for. You know, things like that just need to be accounted for when you're talking about that much money. Same thing with where I live in New Orleans and Katrina. You know, we're getting $110 billion. It needs to be accounted for. You know, somebody needs to account for that money. Or else it's going to go to places it doesn't need to, like somebody's pocket. somebody's going to get a new house or a new car or a new boat or send their kid to college or something along those lines. And really and truly, you know, I'm already giving enough tax money for those reasons, so let's see if we can keep from having to give any more tax money out on that. But that's enough about that. You know, while I'm waiting, I was thinking about Mars the other day because we got quite a few things coming up that are going to be on Mars. New missions that'll be going to Mars, including the Russians have a mission going to Mars. The Chinese have supposedly had a mission going to Mars. The European Space Agency, I think, has two or three. The United States has three or four. So Mars is going to be a busy place over the next decade. Plus, I was reading the other day that NASA is starting to design the rockets to start sending the stuff to Mars ahead of time. In other words, they want to start sending a lot of stuff to Mars ahead of time. They want to have supplies there, equipment there, waiting for the astronauts to do that. They're going to also be doing that on the moon landings, just so you know that. They're going to be sending stuff to the moon prior to us landing on the moon. So these are actually smart things. I mean, this is the way it should be done. You know, put up a bunch of stuff, have all the material waiting there, the astronauts land, send about a dozen astronauts up, they land, they can start building. Send another dozen up after they get a little habitat and so on and so forth. And before long, you have a little colony on the moon. Looking down at Earth, that's got to be a great place to live. Come on, one day moon property is going to be, you know, where it's at. Whenever they figure out how to make it livable where it's comfortable up there, moon properties, because come on, you can have a view of the Earth. You know, wake up in the morning, there's a big blue ball staring at you every morning. Hop on your little shuttle, go down to the planet, go to work, hop on a little shuttle, come home, go to bed. I'm telling you, it's going to be interesting. It really, really is. It should be an interesting journey to take. But, ladies and gentlemen, a couple of things I want to talk about right quick before, while Jeff is getting hold of Yvonne. You know, recent things in politics, and I don't want to get into a political discussion here, ladies and gentlemen, and this isn't where it's going, but recent things in politics lately make me kind of wonder about the future of space for anybody on this planet. The thing about it is I'm figuring space is the way to unite the human race, because bottom line is when we start colonizing places like the moon and Mars and the Russians start colonizing the Chinese and Japanese and whoever else can manage to get up there, it's going to become a busy place. The moon is a much smaller place than planet Earth is. They're going to bump into each other a lot more often than they do here, which they do here a lot. So, you know, I'm really thinking that maybe, you know, with all these new space programs on the horizon, maybe we should start discussing some kind of more of a mutual friendship kind of deal for at least the countries that are in space. I mean, you know, we should have some kind of treaties with, like, the Russians and the Chinese and whoever else is going to be up there. You know, in case there's an emergency that Americans need help or if they need help, that we all answer each other's calls. Just some basic rules to space. You know, just some basic rules, nothing, you know, nothing fancy, nothing hardcore, but something that puts everybody in an even playing field. And, you know, how are we going to divvy up territory on the moon? I mean, is it going to be like the old days? We stake the flag on the moon, so therefore the moon is ours? Is that how that works? I thought, you know, you couldn't own anything in space. Last I had heard, it was against the law to own anything in space. So I was just kind of curious about that. I mean, how is this going to work out? I mean, so if you can't own anything and you build a colony somewhere and then somebody else comes along and says, well, they want to build a colony, that's why we'll start a war. So I don't know. You know, it's one of them things that's been bothering me. You know, I think there need to be some stronger, harder guidelines in dealing with space, what's going to happen in space, you know, what directions we're moving in space. And there should also be a couple of things, you know, put into place on how we should do this. There should just be some information out there where each country has some kind of agreement they have to abide by while they're traveling in space, or while they're colonizing, or while they're building, or whatever. It just needs to be some kind of code of honor or some kind of ethics code or something like that, so that, you know, all the countries are on the same foot and we don't start bumping into each other and getting into a war. Just something I wanted to say and get off my chest. On that note, Jess informed me that Yvonne's on the phone. So, Yvonne, can you hear me?
Yes. Joe, how are you?
Oh, great to have you back on the show. I'm just glad to have you. I've been doing really good. Ladies and gentlemen, Yvonne Smith. I'm going to get you just to tell them a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in this for the people who haven't heard you before, and we'll start from there.
Okay, and I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part.
No, I just said what I'm going to do is I'm just going to get you to tell the audience a little bit about yourself, how you got started in this or why you got into this. And then we'll start the interview from there. That's just for the people who've never heard you before.
Oh, okay. Thank you, John. Thank you for having me on again. I, you know, thinking about how I got started in it, I think I was just meant to do this life work. What basically how I started was when my very close uncle, who's like a brother to me, was dying of cancer. And I was with him every day in the hospital. And, you know, I wished I had, you know, the tools and more of the knowledge of how to assist him in crossing over. And I started looking into, after he passed, I started looking into hypnotherapy. I just became very interested in the different therapies that you can use with regressive hypnosis, in other words. And I wish I had had the knowledge and the training at the time he was dying of cancer to help him. But that led me to begin reading about UFOs and of course, abduction, which I had no idea about before. I became a hypnotherapist. So one thing led to another. I met people in the field and opened up my private practice, and you know, here we are. It's just something that I didn't plan, something I did not major in school. It's just, I think I was meant to do this work, as I mentioned before, Joe.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Well, you know, I try to explain this to people all the time, this calling, whatever you would like to call it, for a lack of a better word, this drive, this need. It's different for different people, but I don't get why it consumes someone's life the way it does. Everybody I've talked to who gets into it as deep as we are, it seems to be all-consuming. It's not a bad thing. I mean, it doesn't, like, run your life, but it does seem to consume an awful lot of time. And for me, you know, people always ask me, do you feel like you're wasting your time, or do you feel like it's going to be a waste of time? I mean, I really don't. I mean, I feel like if I die and still don't have the answer, at least I was trying. How do you feel about that?
I do agree with you, Joe, that it does, when you get into this field, unbeknownst to anyone, it does pull you in. And I always have felt the last 15 years I've done this is that if you're meant to do this work, it's not going to let you go. And myself and my colleagues, I can see when I talk to my colleagues and I see their work, it's such a passion for them and for me, because we feel that we want answers and we're hoping to get answers in our lifetime. And with my work, I know there are people out there who need support and help and understanding and of what's been happening to them all their lives. But when I see the growth and the healing with my clients and my serial members, that's what keeps me going. It's very rewarding. At the same time, it's very it could be very draining, as you know.
Yes, I do. Well, you know, like today, I mean, typical day. You know, I'm doing my regular job. I get 3 or 4 phone calls today. I'm talking to contactees while I'm trying to take care of my construction job, which my phone, and y'all can ask Linda about this, my phone rings on average, you know, 100 times in an 8-hour day. It's just ridiculous. And a lot of that has to do with ufology. A lot of it has to do with construction. But because unfortunately, I do use the same phone for both things. And it is funny because, you know, sometimes I'll have a customer call me from one of my contracting things and, well, Joe, man, I've been trying to get you for 20 minutes. Who have you been on the phone with? Like it's any of their business to start off with. I'm like, well, I was talking to one of my contactees. And, you know, they're kind of like, what?
Right. I understand. I totally understand the reaction because I get that too.
Yeah. It is kind of a funny thing. And, well, you know, it's just some people really take this quite openly and they're quite interested in it. And, you know, they want to tell you what they've seen or what they've heard or what they've experienced, things like that. And then some people just take this almost cruel approach to it where they have to make fun of it. And, of course, I'm kind of a rude person to people like that. I will tell them, I said, what, do you got an education level 5th grade or something? IQ a 6? What's going on here? I said, you don't think there's life in the universe? You're a complete moron. And then they're kind of catching themselves backstepping because they just got slammed and they're like, you know what I mean? Don't tell me there's no life in the universe, because you just make yourself look like an idiot at that point. Go ahead, Yvonne.
Well, I think what happens, Joe, and you might agree, you know, in the time you've been doing this as well, is when I get people that want to dismiss it offhand or they want to make jokes about it, you know, it's really their own fear of the unknown. And, you know, it really does shatter their, it could shatter their sense of their own reality if they really looked into this, you know, because really the people that have been brave enough to come forward to talk about their experiences, you know, the public can see that they're very normal, everyday, you know, your neighbor, my neighbor, or coworker type of person. So it really is fear, I think, mostly that drives people to just want to debunk and dismiss these experiences offhand.
Yeah, I agree with that too, and I think a lot of it is, you know, and it's like what you were talking about regression earlier, and we tell people all the time when they call us, and they say, I really want to know the truth, and I'm like, are you sure you really want to know the truth? Because it's a good chance that when you regress or when you're in therapy learning to access these memories, that some of these memories may not be pleasant memories. Some of them may be, but some of them may not be. So I tell everyone up front, be sure. I said, this is a lot to deal with. I said, thinking you're a contactee and knowing you're a contactee is two entirely different things. I said, and it's a big step between the two. And
That's right. I agree.
And they just, you know, so we try to counsel people. We bring them in and we talk to them. We have them come to chat groups and talk, get them to open up. I notice nowadays, since we have a very large online support chat group these days, and I notice as new contactees or new abductees come into the room, they'll sit around. You'll see the same name sit around for 5 or 6 days, sometimes a couple of weeks. And then all of a sudden, one day, they'll just come in and start telling about their experience. And they'll start remembering things while they're talking. And then the more they seem to talk, the more they seem to remember. Now, it's not saying that everyone who's coming in is telling the truth, because I don't think everybody who's coming in is telling the truth. But that's why we have abduction criteria, so we can kind of have an idea who's telling the truth and who's not. And most of the people who work the room are pretty well adapted to this kind of stuff. They've been doing it for a long time, and they have a pretty good idea who's telling the truth and who isn't. So, but it's a very interesting place, because they can come in, sit down, and talk without being ridiculed, without threat or reprisal, without worrying about losing their job or anybody in their family finding out or anything else.
Yes, that's
that makes it's very anonymous. And if they want to, you know, further down the line, if they want to participate or become part of the organization or get involved, you know, it's funny, Yvonne, but I'll tell you the truth. About 6 years ago, when I started doing this publicly, because I've been doing it for about 23 years, but when I really brought it into the public, most of the people who work with me now, you could not get them to get on a mic. You couldn't get them to get on the radio show. You couldn't get them to do anything. Type and text, that's about it. And really, they didn't want to express themselves too much, with the exception of a few of them they didn't want to express. These days, look, they will take the mic. I've even had a couple of them come on and guest host for me when I was out doing other stuff. It is amazing to see the difference in these people. And it's amazing to see how outcome, I don't know if this is true for you or not, but a lot of these contactees, when they really come to terms with this, become a very type, outgoing type person, like nothing else in life can faze them. And that truly amazes me. Is that true for you, or have you run into that?
Oh, I've run into, you know, like I mentioned before, when I see the personal growth and the healing, you know, because usually when they come to me, they're very frightened and fearful, and they've had all those terrible recurring dreams, and they really don't know what's happening to them. But in the last 15 years, doing my work and establishing Ciro, I have seen the tremendous growth and, you know, spiritual growth. And what they do is, which is wonderful, they, you know, the established Ciro members will help the new people coming in. And they do, many of them have been on talk shows with me over the years and been on radio, and you know, I really applaud them for their you know, for them coming out and talking about their own experiences, because as we, you know, we're still fighting that stigma of oh, all these people are crazy. They have to be crazy. These things don't exist. So when I see them becoming more open and more outgoing, like I said, that's where I feel, you know, this is very rewarding work.
It is. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to mention something right quick. I know we're getting ready to go to break. The virtual auditorium is now maxed out, so if you can't catch us in the virtual auditorium, you can catch us a couple of other ways. You can catch us on AM. You can catch us on Live 365, so tune in. You can catch us on the Stardust Radio Network site, so tune in that way, because at this point, last I checked, the virtual auditorium was full. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry if you can't get in, because I know y'all are going to have questions for Yvonne later, so, you know, we'll see if we can't boost the room, but until then, you can always listen to us via the Internet or AM radio, so tune in and pay attention. Guys, we're just about ready for a break, so I'm not going to get into any real questions hard on Yvonne yet, but when we get back from the break, I got quite a few questions for us. So, ladies and gentlemen, until we get back, I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. I'm sitting and speaking with Yvonne Smith, and when we return, we'll start taking some questions, so please stay tuned.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
SRN 1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mynbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
If you're one of the millions of Americans that suffers from acne or knows a friend or a loved one suffering, please turn up your radio and take down this life-changing information. Introducing Epiclear, the revolutionary new advanced skin treatment imported from Europe, formulated to help get rid of pimples and prevent further breakouts. Great for all ages and most skin irritations, Epiclear is doing something that no other acne treatment formula has ever done. Ever. We're so confident that Epiclear will clear up your skin that we're willing to let you try it for free. That's right, you heard free, and we mean free. Over a $70 value delivered without a prescription right to your house.
Call now while free supplies last at 1-800-656-5993. Nothing to risk and everything to gain. Call Epiclear at 1-800-656-5993. That was 1-800-656-5993. Limit one order per household, please. Call 1-800-656-5993. Shipping and handling not included.
Alexis Parkin, your aviation destination.
You need something grand, something special, something unique. Look no further than the Alexis Park Inn of Iowa City. There you'll find 27 supersized suites of all varieties, most with jacuzzis. The Alexis Park Inn is an aviation-themed hotel where your continental breakfast is delivered right to your door because they're committed to your satisfaction. Give the Alexis Park Inn a call toll-free at 888-9-ALEXIS or check out alexisparkinn.com.
Alexis Park Inn. Your aviation destination, Alexis Park Inn.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mvr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station.
SRN
1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. I'm sitting and speaking with Yvonne Smith, and we're just going to kind of pick up from where we left off, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, I do know, ladies and gentlemen, there are some sound problems with the virtual auditorium, probably because y'all got smack full in there, screaming at each other, shouting and jumping up and down. That's probably what the problem is, but anyway, enough of that. You know, Yvonne, a couple of things now I wanted to ask you, and I know we barely got to touch on a lot of stuff last time you were here, and I really enjoyed talking to you, so I'm just going to get into a little bit deeper here. Now, you know, you've done, I'm sure, quite a few cases, and I'm curious, what would you think would be the most prominent type alien that you've had to deal with? I mean, as far as the contactees are dealing with, I guess I should rephrase that. Go ahead.
Well, the most, I would say, you know, common description are the ones that, you know, typically do the medical experiments. They're short, probably anywhere from 3 to 5 foot tall, sort of grayish in color, of course, the large dark eyes, hairless, you know, no nose, no mouth to speak of, and you know, where also there's no discernible, you know, where you can't tell whether they're a male or female. So those are the ones that basically do the abducting, taking people out of their cars or their homes, and performing the experiments. We have also descriptions of, you know, many others. The taller alien types who seem to be a little bit more in charge, you know, a step higher maybe than the small gray aliens. I have descriptions of very light or light beams, I guess we could call them, which look like they're illuminated within themselves. There's others that have wear a uniform, a very tight-fitting uniform, sometimes with an insignia on them. Others wearing a Dracula-like cape, which I thought was, you know, very strange when I first started getting these cases of the capes. But then when I compared notes with my colleagues, they were getting them as well. So, and of course, there's the praying mantis type, and in not every case that I have, but there are the reptilians, which are, you know, of course, they're very frightening to look at, and, you know, they've also worked, you know, side by side with the gray aliens. So there's, you know, several different descriptions over the years of the different types of aliens.
Well, cause I was curious, because, you know, we, I was talking about this earlier this evening in the support group, but, I mean, we basically deal with five types as far as the organization's concerned. The light beings, which seem to be the most advanced. The grays, which seem to be right under the light beams. And let me clarify something when I say gray, ladies and gentlemen. First off, I've never met anybody describe me actually gray-gray. Blue-gray, a couple of other shades, but not actually gray. The thing about it is there seems to be about 11 types of gray, and some of them are brown, some of them are white. They basically have the same build and structure. They're usually taller. There seems to be a hierarchy inside the gray community. A lot of people describe it as maybe a beehive mentality. I'm not sure if that's the right description. They do seem to be like a little short 3.5 foot, 4 foot, you know, gray worker guys with, they don't actually have as many fingers as the other grays does either, but I mean, they're basically the same alien. It's just a kind of different color, different size. Then you get into the human-type aliens, the reptilian-type aliens. Now, the praying mantis I find interesting because, and I see, Alan, this is something you're on after, God can't even tell you how many cases we stumbled across this, and we don't even know if we're right or if we're wrong. We had gotten a lot of descriptions of this praying-type mantis that instilled this unreal fear in people. And a lot of times it was associated with the reptilian contact, but not always. And the thing about it is we had a couple of contactees who said they remembered being in an area where they could see this thing. And they were watching it, you know, out of fear. They were just staring at it. It was just petrifying to them. And the thing wasn't actually doing them anything. It's just they were petrified. And the thing of it is after I talked to about a dozen of them, they said they noticed it didn't move. And when it moved, it seemed animated. Then two different contactees within a day of each other actually walked up and hit the thing, you know, kind of pushed it. And so after they did it, and we had talked about it, several other ones had done it, they're under the impression that this isn't actually something that's alive. It's more like a prop used to instill a certain element into a person. Now, I don't know if this is true or not. I don't know if this robotic one is based on a real one or not. I did find it very interesting. 12 cases is not enough to, you know, say thumbs down or thumbs up on anything. It does give you an idea. It is something new to think about. But, you know, like I said, 12 cases isn't really enough. Out of as many as we've done, if we've only got 12 we've heard about, we have to kind of wonder, you know, at this point.
Of course.
it's just, you know, the more cases you get into, the more pieces of the puzzle you get, and the more you really understand what's going on. Agendas, you know, I've had a lot of people on the show over the years, 108 shows with probably 80 original guests. The thing of it is, you know, when you talk about the alien agenda, and I don't know how true this is for you or not, Yvonne, that it seems like you either have a dark agenda, and when I mean dark, I'm not meaning absolutely totally disaster for the man, but a dark agenda. And the other one seems to be kind of more aimed at helping us. It's two sharp contrast in areas here. You know? So something's wrong here. It must be a middle ground we're all missing or something. But before I let you answer that, Yvonne, Jeff informed me that Nicole was on the line. Nicole, can you hear me? You have a question for Yvonne this evening?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Hi. Basically, one of my questions that I'm asking you is, like, from all the different perspective views of what the different alien species look like, for instance, you know, the grays, how some claim they're gray, some claim they're blue, some claim, you know, they're brown and whatnot. Like, everyone has different views, right? Correct. So, like, haven't you guys ever got, like, super different opinions and maybe tried to put them all together to try to figure out maybe that there's different types of grays instead of just one certain species, and that, you know, maybe the certain types of light beings and Palladians and stuff like that may actually be interconnected instead of being totally, you know, different and not knowing of each other. They might actually be sort of interconnected, a lot like the human race is with, you know, the different types of humans, you know.
That's interesting. What do you think, Emma?
They certainly, you know, we're still trying to, you know, sort all of these experiences out and all these different types and what their agenda is. Are they coming all from, you know, different planets or underground or different, you know, or another dimension? You know, we certainly have seen them, however, all in one, say, I'm going to say, on the craft, working side by side. The human-looking ones, which we feel they are the hybrids, working along with the, and, you know, and I it's become so, you know, commercial when we call them grays, and you know, you're right, you know, they're not really gray, but this is, I you know, think the best description that someone can give under a very, you know, extraordinary circumstance. You know, they've been seen side by side. The praying mantis with the small gray beings, the worker beings, and the human ones. So they could, you know, very well all be interconnected. What we're trying to figure out is their, you know, their ultimate plan, what their agenda is. I mean, as humans, I think we all want to put everything in a nice, neat little box. You know, okay, they're, you know, malevolent. No, they're benevolent. They're here to help us. You know, no, they're not. I believe in the last 15 years doing this work, I don't believe that they've come down here, you know, just to help us. I think if they have cured somebody of a disease or, you know, a malady, I think it's done as a side effect, you know, to what they're, to their experiments that they're performing. You know, I hate to think about the implication of these hybrid babies that are being created. You know, of course, they're growing up and becoming more and more perfected each year. You know, are they going to be among us where we're not even going to suspect or they don't even know they're around? I mean, we just, at this point, we don't know. We just know that there are, you know, hundreds, thousands of cases that are reporting the same types of experiences with these different types of beings that, you know, we're saying right now there's about five different types that we've mentioned, and seeing more and more of these hybrids involved.
You know, the hybrids are interesting. The children are interesting. You know, one of the things I found interesting about that question she asked is, for us, we've always thought everything was kind of sort of connected in a weird way.
Sure.
Most contactees I talk to tell me that they feel the grays work for the light beams. I've got quite a few of them since we started teaching them to ask questions that have gotten a lot more information. It's information we do discuss and we do talk about because we've had, you know, several hundred contactees now come back with the same information from the same questions. So you can consider it pertinent evidence or pertinent information, but still, you know, I'm skeptical because over the years I've learned that ET doesn't tell the truth. ET does lie. They don't always have our best interests at heart. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And this is why I tell people all the time, it is their agenda. It's not our agenda. It is their agenda.
I totally agree. So it is their agenda. And, you know, they've been coming down here and doing this for a very long time. And the thing is that, you know, you probably know in the work that you do, that's where the abductee or the experiencer really becomes angry about the fact that they're not asked permission. You know, they are taken against their will and they're, you know, experimented on and they're frightened and they can't talk to anybody about it. You know, they feel violated by the beings and then they turn around and can't talk about it to their friends or family because the society has told us for the last 50 some odd years that UFOs don't exist. So, and you know, with disinformation program and misinformation, I mean, people are still afraid to talk, unfortunately. But it is their agenda, Joe. I totally agree.
They just, yeah, a lot of people do seem to be, it's better now than it was 10 years ago or 20 or 30, but, you know, it's not as good as it was in the 50s. All right, let me be honest with you, ladies and gentlemen. In the 50s, one out of four people would discuss this subject matter openly in like a cafe. In 1980s, that was one out of every 100. Now, the last poll I heard that was done in 2000, it's one out of seven people in the United States will discuss this in an open area. Of course, I'm sure I'm one of them because I'll talk about it anywhere. I don't really care. I'll discuss it anywhere. But getting back to that question, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, while I'm thinking about this, when you call in, remember turn your radio down because if you don't turn your radio down when you're talking, you're going to get feedback. I just wanted to mention that. I know just one of those things I wanted to say. But, you know, getting back to the question, it's just really and truly when you think about these aliens, you think about some of the things they're doing. Yes, I'm telling you, I've heard many good, many good contacts. But even the ones with good contacts said just what Yvonne just said. They would like to be asked, okay? Most contactees, if you ask them whether they have a good or a bad experience, by the way, it doesn't matter. If you asked them, would they stay a contactee? If they had to give it up, if they had a choice, would they give it up? 95% of them say no. They would keep the contact. Okay, this amazes me in itself. But yet, the thing that makes them most mad, besides some of the lovely things they perform on you, is the fact that they don't ask. And they don't ask anybody. Regardless what level of contactee you are, whether you're an abductee, a contactee, a keeper, or even higher than that, they still don't ask. They don't feel the need to ask. The best you can hope, they think of us as children. Most people say they feel like a pet, okay? But I'll be nice and say children. But that is the highest level they will grant us. They really do not think that we're intelligent enough to grasp most of what they're doing, to understand most of what they're doing. They will discuss their plans and agendas with contactees, but most of them don't even have a clue what they're talking about. So it's a tough one. And, you know, you have to remember perception is an important thing here. You know, it's why it took us so long to find out what a gray really looked like. Because people see something, and everybody's going to describe it 50 different ways. So you have to really start asking questions like, did they have fingernails? Do they have eyelids? What do their eyes really look like? What color is their skin really? How does it feel? Not so much an overall description of what happened or overall description of alien, but details, because that makes the individual focus. And when those details start adding up that everybody's saying the same thing about the mouth or the teeth or the fingers or the hands or the feet or their eyes, then you realize you have something. But ladies and gentlemen, that is the only way to really do it. I mean, because let's be honest, people lie too.
Yeah.
Do you have that problem, Yvonne? I know I'm hogging the mic here, but do you have that problem, I mean, with people? I mean, I get the damnedest things. people come up and tell me some of the damnedest stories. But go ahead.
You mean making up stories or what do you
mean?
Well,
yeah, I mean, do you have any people coming in and just making up stories?
No, you know, I don't. I just had, you know, very few over the years where, you know, on the phone pretty much I could tell whether a person's truly had, you know, a genuine UFO abduction. I've come across very few people that are insincere and are purposely trying to, you know, make up a story for, you know, for attention or publicity. You know, as you know, these people that have had these experiences, you know, most of the time, the high percentage of them do not want to come forward and be public about it. But it's like being a detective. You know, you can tell when someone calls and begins to talk about experiences that, you know, I could tell this person, you know, needs to be referred to, you know, a therapist, or this person is, you know, is not having, whatever this person is talking about, they're not having an abduction experience. I just had that experience, you know, last week with a new person that called me. But I find most people are sincere, Joe.
Well, I guess it's because of the amount of cases we deal with these days. You know, when I first got involved with this, I never really had anybody that was trying to fraud or fake it. But I guess now, because we do a lot of this in the open public, that we just get people who want to, it's probably one out of every eight that apply to the organization. Most people won't apply. A lot of people will go take the questionnaire, the 50 questionnaire, and they'll be kind of intrigued after they take it if they hit like 25 or more of the answers, and a lot of people hit 40 or 50 of them. They'll usually fill out an abduction report, send it to us, we'll dispatch it to one of the investigators, and then, you know, they'll just take it from there. But these days, to be honest with you, the things that we do the most of is document and try to help. I mean, your case, what are you working for? I mean, we're all working for the truth, but, I mean, how can I phrase this question? What is it that, I mean, you're working towards the most of, or you're gathering the most of, I guess I should say?
Well, I mean, my first objective, you know, as a hypnotherapist, as someone's hypnotherapist, is to get them release from years of, you know, wondering, you know, years of recurring dreams and being fearful. It's just that nagging question, you know, what happened to me? So to get them released first, to get them sleeping and getting on with their lives, then, of course, you know, gathering the information, the data from my cases, which, you know, I've discovered many similarities and patterns. And, of course, that's when, you know, you find out that there's something to it because of the similarities and patterns from case to case. And, you know, most of the time, these people that I work with don't know each other until later on they come into attend the CIRO meetings. So it's, you know, of course, you know, yes, I do also want the truth. I think, you know, of course, these people that are having experiences want the truth, and we want to get the truth from our own government, who has been withholding information from all of us, and they have no right to. You know, we have a right to know what's been flying around in our skies, and, of course, they're coming down here and abducting, you know, people.
Yeah, and seeming like they're having a ball doing it. Best I could tell, it seems like they abducted family lines, but I'm not 100% sure. I'd say it's a pretty reasonable assumption at this point, seeing that we have several generational cases now.
Most all my cases, you know, I found that it does run intergenerational. And what I find interesting, Joe, is people come to me, you know, they've had an individual that comes to me say they've had questions throughout their lives about something. They know something strange happened, but they don't know what. But the reason they finally want to come to terms with it is because all of a sudden their own children are starting to talk about strange things coming into their rooms, or, you know, bright light coming into their bedroom at night and so forth. So they feel the only way they can help their children is for them to deal with their own possible experiences.
You know, it's hard because, you know, sometimes, and I don't know if this is true for you or not, but I have had parents come in because of the children having these things.
But that's
they'll come in, you know, so they'll come in and say something like, you know, my son or my daughter said this, this, or that, and they said, I didn't want to think about it, but, you know, when I was a child and as a young person growing up, I remember these same things. They have to talk about it.
Yeah.
By the way, aliens, if y'all are listening, it really ticks parents off when you take their children without asking.
That's right.
I just wanted to say that, you know, I don't know if y'all are listening or not, but it really does, because I'm a parent myself, and it really hacks me off. I understand that they have this agenda that they're working for, but damn, it would be nice if they would be a little bit more forthcoming with what they're doing.
It would be. It would make our work a lot easier, that's for sure.
Well, let me ask you this, Yvonne. Now, let's say we got some people listening to the show that have no idea if they're a contactee or not. They may have some weird things happening to them, some stuff that they're not understanding. What do you think should be the first thing they should be looking for? To give them a sign that they may be having some kind of alien contact.
Well, usually they're experiencing sleepless nights, recurring dreams could be an indication. Fear of a certain place, a certain stretch of road, you know, that they've had for many years, a certain room in their house. Of course, obviously, the marks or scars that may turn up overnight on their bodies with no, you know, explanation for it. They don't remember falling or really injuring themselves. You know, because when you have a scar that comes out, a pretty deep scar, you remember if you've fallen or you cut yourself with a knife. I mean, you remember those things. But usually when something like that happens and they appear overnight, a person doesn't remember getting it. And there's no pain, usually, accompanied with these marks. It's a combination of the different symptoms, not just one or two. It's a combination that may be an indicator that this person has had abduction experiences. A sighting of a UFO by themselves or with other family members, and very vivid dreams of UFOs, but not always a sighting. So, like I said, it's just a combination of symptoms. So, I don't want any of the listeners out there, you know, thinking that they've had a sleepless night, you know, they've been abducted. I don't, you know, want anyone going home with any misconceptions like that.
And what is that with contactees, by the way? None of them sleep worth a poop. Excuse my French, ladies and gentlemen. But I do notice that when they really come to terms with this and they find whatever it is, their groove, their niche, whatever it is that where they belong in this. Because, by the way, contactees, I want y'all to notice there is some kind of, I don't know, we all have something we're supposed to be doing, it seems like. And a lot of contactees find themselves either helping other contactees or getting involved in this in a more public way to, you know, wake people up. But those people seem to sleep fine. It's the rest of them that seem to be having problems, or the ones that are just starting to understand that there's something going on in their life, or the ones that wake up in the morning can't understand why they're as tired as they are when they went to bed. You know, they're like, what is this? And I've had quite a few contactees tell me that they go to bed, you know, get a full night's sleep, 8 hours, and get up in the morning and feel like they were just as tired as when they put their head down. That's because you actually want to sleep for at least 5 of those hours. But anyway, you know, I just wanted to bring those kind of
feeling things. Like, you know, many times they say, I feel like a truck ran me over, you know, or flu-like symptoms accompanied some, you know, sometimes with a very vivid dream. So there's several symptoms.
I seen something that went by in the text a few minutes ago in the virtual auditorium that kind of interested me. And I know we'll have to get to this when we come back from the break, but I had seen somebody said something about the fear factor, or that we seem to be focusing on the fear factor. You know, that's an interesting statement. So when we come back from the break, ladies and gentlemen, me and Yvonne will talk about that. So on that note, I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalva. I'm sitting and speaking with Yvonne Smith. And as soon as we return, I promise we'll start taking some more questions. So please stay tuned.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
SRN
1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mynbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
We're here today with Paul Dow of Timeshares Only. And, Paul, you've got some terrific news for timeshare owners.
That's right. In the next 6 months, over $3.5 billion of timeshares will be sold.
So this is the perfect time to sell.
Exactly, which is why you need to get your property into our network. And if you call us right now, you'll also get a $500 shopping spree absolutely free.
$500 free?
Yes. Just for posting your property with Timeshares Only. And when you do sell your property, you'll get cash. It's a double bonus. You can't lose.
Except if I don't call.
Hey, over 10 million people will be looking to buy a timeshare. So we need your property now.
The number to call now is 1-800-921-0866. That's 1-800-921-0866. Turn your timeshare into cash and get a free $500 shopping spree.
And if our lines are busy, please keep calling.
That number again for timeshares only is 1-800-921-0866. That's 1-800-921-0866.
Is life moving too fast? If you're self-employed or a small business owner, you have no choice but to move as fast as you can. Sometimes you move so fast you don't take a close look at life's details. When was the last time you looked at your health insurance? If you don't have health insurance or if you have the wrong coverage, serious medical bills could mount up. That's where the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company comes in. We provide affordable health insurance for the self-employed and small business owners. If you don't have health insurance, call us. If you have coverage, call us. Anyway, see if we can give you better coverage at a better price. Stay on track for affordable health insurance designed specifically for the self-employed and small business owners.
Call 877-735-6460. That's 877-735-6460. Home office located in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states and benefits may vary by state. Association membership may not be required to obtain insurance. Call 877-735-6460 for details.
Alexa Parkin, your aviation destination.
You need something grand, something special, something unique. Look no further than the Alexis Park Inn of Iowa City. There you'll find 27 supersized suites of all varieties, most with jacuzzis. The Alexis Park Inn is an aviation-themed hotel where your continental breakfast is delivered right to your door because they're committed to your satisfaction. Give the Alexis Park Inn a call toll-free at 888-9-ALEXIS or check out alexisparkinn.com.
Alexis Park Inn. Your aviation destination, Alexis Park Inn.
SRN
1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sitting and speaking with Yvonne Smith, and we're going to start getting some questions here in a few minutes. You know, we were having an interesting conversation at the break, and her name was Commander Cato, Yvonne. Now I remember, now that we're not at the break anymore, I remember her name. Okay, that was smart. It was Commander Cato and Roy Timms, and Dr. Leo was doing the hypnosis and the work with them. And if you just got to hear this case, you'd just flip over and laugh your butt off, but one day I'll see if I can find an archive for you to send it to you, because it's just funny as can be. But anyway, enough about all of that stuff. okay? A couple of things, you know, we were talking about abductions and some of the things to look for, and it's crucial that y'all understand what to look for. And it's crucial that you know that, you know, you can use regression, you can use a lot of things. Personally, you know, I'm funny. I use hypnosis as a last resort measure. I like to try everything else first, and then I'm very, very, very strict on how we allow regression. Now, I know Yvonne does regression, and she actually probably does way more of this than I personally do. So when you're doing a regression, I mean, what's a typical regression take, Yvonne?
I usually,
or the procedures, I should say.
I'm sorry, how long does a regression take?
Well, no, I mean, what's like the typical procedures, typical questions? I don't want you giving away any house secrets or anything, but I'm just curious, you know, how y'all go about setting it up and, you know, what may be the line of questioning and, you know, what can you expect? Actually, that's what I should have said. What can you expect if you ask someone like yourself if you ask to be regressed?
You know, obviously, you have to just take each individual case as it comes to you, and depending on what memory or experience a person wants to target first. Many times we go back into childhood, as far back as maybe the person was about 5 years old. I usually set aside about 2 hours for a regression, because I do talk to my client cognitively to get information about where, you know, what area they want me to target, what experience, what the year, you know, how old they were, where they living, and what happened, what do they remember consciously. And I put them in hypnosis. It could, you know, hypnosis can be anywhere from, you know, it just depends on what happens in the session, but half hour to an hour to, you know, up to 2 hours. I find that after 2 hours, you know, someone can get pretty tired because sometimes it can be very draining, very emotional, depending on what they experience. And they do relive. People do relive the actual abduction. So, you know, once I take them out of hypnosis, then I debrief them about the session, and, you know, we discuss what happened, and then what they want to target for their next session. You know, so it's a long process, and because I have a, you know, initial interview with someone prior to doing any kind of hypnosis.
You know, well, you know, the reason I ask you that, I know it's kind of a loaded question, but I want people to understand that this isn't, you're not going to walk in, be regressed, and that's going to be end of it. I just wanted to get that across to people, because I get people that come up to me and think that, okay, well, regress me, and then I'll be all better, and I can go on with my life. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's just not the truth of the matter. No, I'm sorry. And, I mean, some of y'all may get it faster than others. I'm not going to argue that point. And some of y'all may never get it. But don't expect it. And I'll say this and be totally honest, and I mean this sincerely. If you are a contactee, don't ever think it's going to go away, okay? Figure out how you can use it to your advantage. It's one of the things we teach, but don't expect it to go away. And if it does, you know, it does. But as far as I can tell, it may slow down. It may even stop time from time, but it always seems to start back up somewhere else. And I have contactees, well, if you want to count generationals, from about age 2, actually age 1, to well in their 70s. So I can't see where it stops. You know, I know Daryl Sims swears he can stop an abduction, but he gets mad at me every time I ask him how come his son and his grandson still get abducted. So yeah, that's one of those catch-22s, I guess. You can stop yours, but you can't stop theirs. I got an issue with that. I mean, have you had people, though, you know, this is a serious question, I mean, have you had people who managed to stop having contact?
I have not, no. I give my clients tools to use to feel protection, to feel protected, to empower them. I certainly can't stop abductions, and I tell them that from the very beginning. Sometimes throughout the years I've seen abductions with certain people slow down, but not exactly stop altogether.
It is interesting. You know, it's interesting to watch because sometimes they change, you know. they may be having this kind of experience, and life kind of goes on, and the experience is kind of changed. It is really interesting to see people in their late 30s, 40s, 50s. Some of their contacts are very interesting. Some of them are very fulfilling, and some of them are very informative. The younger ones, sometimes they're good, most of the time they're not. That's the easiest way I can say that. I don't want to get into particulars, ladies and gentlemen. I know someone had just sent me an instant message asking if we could get into some of the more details of an actual abduction, but there's not all that much we can talk about without giving the store away. I mean, let's be honest about it. And I mean, you can expect things like you can be picked up. There's a whole host of experiments that they can have performed on you. And then there are the extreme cases where we've had people, eyes removed, body parts removed, put back, pretty much seamless, not quite scarless, but pretty close to a perfect take back and put away. I mean, we've had them, where people have been laying on their bed, saying different prayers, and they said that the aliens have looked at them and just kind of laughed. And which is, I do know that the Greys do have somewhat of a sense of humor, and the reptilians and the humans do as well. But still, it is kind of weird when you hear those stuff. I've had, over the last 5 years, I've had about three dozen contactees tell me this, that they were praying to God to save them, and the alien looked down and said, "And where is your God now?" I don't know if this is the alien or if this is the person. What do you think, Yvonne? That's a hard one there.
And I'm sorry, I didn't hear. They asked them, you saw them praying, and what did the alien say?
Yeah, the alien said, looked down at him and said, "Where's your God now?" And, when I heard that, that just sounded, maybe the alien said, I don't know, but it sounded like maybe something that might have been being pulled out of their own psyche.
It could be. I've not had anybody tell me that, at all. It's whatever the person wants to use to empower themselves, whether it's prayer or a white light of protection or, it's whatever they use. And if they want me to give them suggestions for empowerment, I do that right before I'm ready to bring them out of hypnosis. But I've not heard that at all. It could come, like you say, within their own psyche. It's very hard to tell. And I have found over the years that when an abductee or, experiencer asks their abductors a question, they really don't get straight answers. So I feel, take what you've been told with a grain of salt. It's kind of...
Reason.
File it away, and we'll see if it makes sense later.
And that's you couldn't have said that any better. That's how it is. Take it with a grain of salt. We tell people keep a journal, keep a log. We tell people keep a journal of your dreams because you never know what you're going to get out of them. But it's one of those things that you just have to remember that don't expect everything to be the truth just because they're extraterrestrials. Don't expect everything that comes out of their mouth is going to be the truth.
Right.
And don't expect that everything they're doing is here to benefit us. And I'm not going to argue with the people out there that have good contact. I do believe that there are good contacts. And I do even believe that there are some good benefits from contact. I'm one of the people who will tell you I believe that. But I'm telling y'all, ladies and gentlemen, there's something else going on, and it's not near as pleasant or near as sweet as we'd all like to think it is. But what do you think, Yvonne? I guess I shouldn't, just hog that. What do you think? Well, go ahead.
I'm sorry, ask the question again, Joe?
Well, what I was thinking was, me and you have talked about this a few times and even this evening, but as far as is the ones being good, that's fine. There's good stuff going on, but, what I was trying to get across to people is there seems to be something else. Maybe dark is not the right word, but there seems to be something else that is going on that I would have to personally say is not to benefit man.
As we discussed this before, Joe, it's, they have their own agenda, definitely. I don't believe that they're here only to help us, I know that almost every experiencer that I've worked with has been told about, that we're destroying our planet, that we have to be much more aware of what we're doing to ourselves, which Okay, that's a good message for us. That could be a positive message for us. You know, to be for us to be aware to take care of our surroundings, our planet, and so forth, our natural resources. But they're not coming down here just for that. They definitely have a plan, and this is what you know we're all wondering about. What is this ultimate plan? And I truly think it involves the hybrid program. Because they take ovum, because they take sperm and skin samples and so forth. I think it revolves around the hybridization program.
And, yeah, I think it does. Oh, I'm glad you brought that back up to the hybridization program because a lot of people ask us what are we talking about when we're talking about that. That could actually be a couple of things, ladies and gentlemen. You know, let me ask you this. I mean, have you had any of your contactees talk about seeing their I hate to call them their children, but have seen children or have seen, like, hybrid children. A lot of times these people do think that they're their children. I'm not sure if they are or if they aren't, but have you had that happen with your contactees?
Oh, all the time. Men and women are taken on the craft and shown many times taken into a room. And there's a wall full of little tanks. Filled with what looks like water, but it's thicker than water, as they describe it, with these babies floating. And, men and women are told that this particular baby is theirs, and they have to love it and nurture it because, it'll die if it doesn't get nurture and experience the bonding. Because I know from the data that they have, they do not, these aliens, whoever they are, wherever they're from, do not have that human bonding that we experience down here with our families, with our children. They seem to be incapable of it. So when people are taken aboard, they're even given children or babies to hold. And often these other beings are surrounding them and almost watching this bonding experience with this baby and this experiencer. They're told it could be her baby or it's just a baby. And usually the baby is not completely human looking. It's very frail looking with unusually larger eyes than a normal human newborn baby. So this happens time and time again, and then they're taken aboard again and shown, adolescent children or hybrids. So they're taken, almost at each stage of development and made to play with them or, play a game with them or, again, it's the bonding that I think that they're incapable of, and this is where they look to us for that. But it's a little unnerving. We don't know, like I said, ultimately where these hybrids are going to go, and what their what their program is.
And that's a mouthful in itself. What is it? But let me ask you this. I'm going to put you on the spot real hard here. What do you think it is? Or what's your best guess?
Of the program?
Yeah, basically. I mean, what they're trying to achieve.
So what they're trying to achieve, which I know that sounds, so science fiction still, I think that what they're trying to achieve is to live, have these hybrids, these perfected hybrids to live among us. To learn how we live, going to a restaurant, driving a car, I think that's what their ultimate plan is, for them to live down here among us. Why? That's another question. We don't get answers from this, Joe. We have to go to the next question. Why do they want them to live among us?
I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Are we humans, you know, going to eventually be eliminated, you know, one by one, and have these hybrids take over? I mean, I'm just guessing. I mean, I have no definitive answer for this, but, you know, and it sounds, I always hate to bring it up when I'm doing an interview, because it's just, you know, people are still trying to grasp, and we're still trying to, bring to the mainstream media and audience that UFOs are flying up there. They're also coming down here abducting our citizens. You know, people still are trying to grasp that. So, you know, bringing up the hybrid program, sometimes I think, oh, it's just, you know, that's way too advanced.
I agree. We have what we call UFO 101, UFO 202, UFO 303, UFO 404, and 505. And we literally mean that because some people are ready for 101, some are ready for 202, and so on and so forth. And radio shows you can get a lot of information out on, but for people like myself and you and quite a few of the other guests, it's hard because we talk about this same thing quite often. So for us, it's kind of old news, but when we get, you know, a chance to sit down with each other and talk, like at the conferences and stuff, then you'll hear, like, UFO 505, like with myself, David Jacobs, and what's the old guy's name? I forgot his name now. But anyway, the three of us, he was giving a lecture with David Jacobs at the conference. And
that was Bud Hopkins.
Yeah, Bud Hopkins, thank you. I can't believe I couldn't remember Bud Hopkins' name. He's going to kick me next time he sees me. But anyway, the three of us were having a discussion, and it was a private discussion, even though it was at a table. Well, David kind of looked at me, and I looked up, and there was 20, 25 people standing there, kind of like got their head bent, trying to listen to what was being said, because it was truly a much deeper discussion than you're going to hear anywhere else. I got to be honest about it, because it was a discussion that was really more of a meat and potatoes kind of thing. We didn't need to talk about all the other stuff. We're already aware of all of that stuff. We were more interested in the breakthroughs and what we had each found recently, what kind of patterns or things that we had seen that may help each other to understand this better. Because what we do, ladies and gentlemen, and this is the truth of the matter, we're all collecting pieces of the puzzle. None of us have all of them. Some of us may have more than others, but none of us have all of them. So as we meet and talk and meet and talk, we're kind of swapping pieces of the puzzle, hoping that we get some kind of coherent picture out of this. That's the layman's terms, the best way I can explain it, the easiest. What do you think, Yvonne?
You're right. I mean, it is a tremendous puzzle that we're all trying to piece together. And, you know, we know that these experiences are happening. We know it's a physical event. It's not in you know, someone's mind. They're not making these stories up. We just have enough, you know, data now, enough cases to draw from, you know, and we're just trying to figure out why this is happening. You know, I'm hoping that we get answers in our lifetime. I don't expect our government to come forward with any kind of, you know, news or breakthrough or, you know, the truth. I really don't. You know, we had that big hoopla coming in the year 2000 that, you know, the government was going to come forward. You know, and it didn't happen, and it's not going to happen. I don't feel it's going to happen, not in our lifetime.
I catch a lot of stuff for giving Dr. Greer a hard time, but I did. I told him to his face, I liked his idea and what he was trying to do. I told him I never thought it would work, and I thought that it was going to end up in the long run hurting us more than it's helping us, and I was right, and he was wrong. But anyway, enough of that. I won't even get into that. Who we have? Oh, I see Linda's got a hand up. So, Linda Keeper, why don't you come up, give us your first name and location, and you're live and on the air with Yvonne Smith.
Good afternoon, Ms. Smith. Thank you for being a guest on our show again. I was wondering, in all the cases that you've studied, have you ever found a contactee that really doesn't want this experience to stop?
Yes, I have had. I've talked to people in my case study and so forth, in my support group, that now that they know this is in their lives, they don't want it to stop because they want to know why this has happened to them. What do they want from them? That's why they don't want it to stop.
I don't know. It's weird. I don't know. I'm just going to leave that alone because that'll just get me in trouble. Someone just asked me, who's the highest profile abductee you know? I'm like, now what kind of question is that? you know, I wouldn't even know how to answer. I mean, do you know anybody who's come forward that's high profile that says they're a contactee?
And, you know, in the past few years, of course, there was the famous case of Betty and Barney Hill. Travis Walton with his 5-day abduction is still very high profile. Trying to think of the Allagash Allagash Four, who were it was a multiple abduction, and I forget. I believe it was in the 70s this happened. So there have been famous abduction cases. I have one of abduction of two brothers from Knoxville, Tennessee. That were abducted when they were 4 or 5 years old. And the one brother is still having ongoing experiences, and another brother is just receiving tremendous information. It just keeps going on and on, and the more we, the more we delve into this, like I said before, the more questions we have.
Yeah. You know, that's true, and it always comes back to that. The more we ask, the more we need, the more questions we get. You start out with one question, you end up with 50. You're like, okay. And don't get me wrong, ladies and gentlemen, there are some answers, okay? I mean, there really are. One of the answers is yes, the planet is being visited. Without any reasonable doubt, if you do your homework, if you really do your homework, you'll know this planet's being visited beyond any reasonable doubt. And you'll know it's been being visited for a very long time. As far as abductions go, you know, that's harder on people because the physical evidence is very limited. Even though there is some, it's still very limited. Let me ask you this. Have you had any people that have had missing baby syndrome, or what? Maybe that's not a good way of calling it, but, you know, where they had gone and seen a doctor, the doctor said, yes, you're pregnant. At the third month, they just weren't pregnant anymore. Have you ever had any cases like that?
Yes, I've had cases like that. Some people have taken the home pregnancy test. You know, it says it indicated that she was pregnant, and then, going to the doctor and discovering, yes, okay, she gets a confirmation again. And in about maybe, 3 to 4 months, and I'm just getting this from the top of my head, so I don't have all my case files in front of me, but about 3 or 4 months into the pregnancy, all of a sudden, the fetus is gone. She experiences bleeding or, an indication that something was wrong. And I know, my colleague Bud Hopkins has many of these cases. In fact, he's, came out with this, I'm not sure if it was in the Missing Time book, but, once again, these cases are very, unnerving. These babies are being taken and being manipulated, I'll say, on the craft. And maybe this is part of the, what's being shown to these experiences when they go on, onto the craft. It's just you're wondering, why are they doing this? And what gives them the right, really, to take someone's baby?
Well, I'm assuming, and maybe I shouldn't make assumptions, but I'm assuming at least some of these people who are seeing babies on board the ship, these are the babies they're seeing. Now, I'm not going to say that.
I don't think all of them, but certainly, certainly some of them. They're definitely, they take these children, they're manipulated. They're going to be half alien, half human. Many experiencers also have that experience of having to, I hate to say it, but having, sex with the alien to produce one of these hybrids. And I also stay away from that, you know, part of the research, and especially when I've done talk shows over the years, because, you know, this is a very sensational topic as it is. And then when you throw sex in the mix, and it really has nothing to do with sex, it's all having to do with their agenda, you know, people out there, you know, some people out there want to just exploit it.
Isn't that the truth, too? Yeah, I know. It's like when you bring up the religious part with this, people just get insane. I mean, that's why we do everything we do these days. We make sure that it's kept to a G-rated format because that limits some of the stuff that can be said. If it's something we think is a material that shouldn't be in a G-rated, you know, then we'll, you know, have a private meeting or over a private room or something along those lines. But we do that intentionally to keep people from getting into those areas. You know, I know we're getting close to the break, but I had seen a couple of interesting things scroll by in a virtual auditorium, and I wanted to mention this to you. I'll let you think about it after the break. But I've had a couple of people ask things like they had gone and seen their doctor, I guess the gynecologist or something, and they said they had children before, and one of the women said they hadn't even had sexual contact yet at the time, and the doctor said she had at least one child. I've seen another one in there that said the doctor said she had at least three children. She's never had any. And I was curious if you'd ever run across that, but I know we're getting close to the break, so I'm going to probably wait till we come back to the break to let you answer that question, Yvonne. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live at SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalba. I'm sitting and speaking with Yvonne Smith, and as soon as we return, we'll start taking some more questions, so please stay tuned.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mymbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
Quicken Loans knows when your mortgage payment is too big, it follows you everywhere.
Hey, guys, where are we going?
Hi, Big Mortgage.
Dad and I are going car shopping.
Not without me.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
A mortgage payment that's too big can drive every financial decision you make.
Scooch over, little man. The Big Mortgage is your dad's constant companion.
Dad, the Big Mortgage is squishing me.
I'd really like to get a bigger car.
The Big Mo says no.
Don't let your big mortgage payment push you around. Pick up the phone and let Quicken Loans show you how to lower your payment up to 33%. That's a third off your payment. Call 800-928-5199. Quicken Loans makes it fast and easy to say goodbye to your big mortgage payment.
You're not the boss of us.
R2.
R9.
R2.
R9.
Am I going to have to separate you two?
Call Quicken Loans at 800-928-5199 today. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. Call Quicken Loans at 800-928-5199.
What's happening? I'll tell you what. Ken Emmons here. How'd you like to spend a weekend in Branson for only $99? That's right. You and your family can now relax in Branson for only $99 or take the honey for a quick romantic getaway any weekend you choose. This amazing vacation offer includes 3 days, 2 nights in a great hotel, breakfast every morning of your stay, preferred show tickets, and hundreds of dollars in coupon savings all around town. You know, Branson, Missouri's got amusement parks, world-class golfing, beautiful lakes, endless shopping, and more live shows in Vegas. So give us a call now at 1-866-338-1410. Branson for $99. It's our way of saying thanks for checking out our beautiful new resort, the Grand Crown. Here's that number again, 1-866-338-1410. Toll free, 1-866-338-1410. Branson for $99.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mvr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station.
SRN 1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production. Now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. I'm sitting and speaking with Yvonne Smith. We got about 27 minutes, guys, so if you're going to get your questions in, this is the time to do it. I'm sorry, I like talking to Yvonne. I got a lot of questions for her, guys. Sorry, just how it is. You know, Yvonne, a couple of things I was thinking about, too, because I kind of wanted to touch on these things. When you're talking to contactees, what is one of the things you'll tell them to, what's something they can expect to, well, let's put it like this. What can they expect maybe negative to come out of this as far as trying to learn about what's going on? And will the positive outweigh the negative by knowing they're a contactee?
Negative, well, I'm trying to think. People come to me, obviously, because they need help. They need to try to make sense of, you know, something that possibly happened to them, and I can't say, and I don't tell them, you know, right off the bat that, oh, yes, definitely you're an abductee. I mean, it takes a lot of, you know, we follow a protocol. One thing that I found that, you know, when someone begins to look into this and they do discover that, yes, they've had experiences, is the sometimes the reaction from their family members, you know, and some of their friends that, you know, they kind of make fun of. They're not, you know, they're not really told, oh, you're crazy, but, you know, they're kind of the butt of the jokes. The positive thing that I've seen is, you know, of course, I think I found over the years that many experiencers have become aware of taking care of our planet, taking care of themselves, eating the right kinds of food. Certainly I have seen psychic abilities being heightened when they've had an experience. And I think everyone does have psychic abilities. We all have the gift, but we all don't realize it. We don't, we don't become aware of, unless maybe sometimes a very traumatic experience may happen. I know people who've had terrible car accidents or, you know, say near-death experience, they come out with heightened psychic abilities. The same with someone who's experienced an abduction. So many of my serial members are very, very psychic, and they use their gift to help others. So it's not for, you know, for self-gain. And because if you do use it for self-gain, then, you know, you're misusing your gift, and you may not have your gift for very long. So, there are many positive aspects later on. They meet other people who've had these experiences. Couples have gotten together and even gotten married because I feel that, you know, of course, they have that common bond that where they could talk about their experiences.
I'm glad you said that because I thought I was the only researcher that had that happen to him. We've got a couple of people who have gotten together and gotten married. it was an amazing thing to me. I got to say, it was very unexpected the first time it happened. This was a while back, but it was very unexpected. And now that I've seen it a few times over the years, I'm kind of like, wow. And they seem to work. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's true for you or not, but the relationship seemed to work. They seem to work quite good, too. I was kind of like, okay, well, this is something new.
they have that common bond, I think, having that comfort level with each other.
It seems to provide a comfort and friendship level that I guess you just normally don't get, especially in a new relationship. That's an interesting thing in itself. Getting back to what we were talking about before the break, so I keep seeing threatening in my life in the virtual autonomy. I see y'all's hands up. We'll get to y'all in just a second. They were talking about people who had gone to the doctor, and the doctor had told them that they had a baby and the person had never had sex yet, or they had gone to the doctor and the doctor said, well, you know, it looks like you've had two or three children, and the person's like, as far as I can tell, I've never been pregnant. I mean, have you had anybody tell you that?
I've had cases where the woman has not had sexual relations, and she finds out that she's pregnant, you know, which is very unnerving to that person. It's very difficult to understand. So, yes, I mean, these these cases are out there. I know Bud has many cases. David Jacobs as well has many cases. These are the cases that we can't just, you know, we don't talk about them many times publicly because, like I said, it's just we're still trying to get the attention of mainstream public and media to listen to the fact that, you know, these abduction experiences are real. But we cannot turn our back to these missing pregnancies and, you know, all the other things that happen to people during their abduction experience. I mean, there's, you know, it runs a whole gamut of things. And many times I avoid talking about it in an interview, but I do have them in my caseload.
Yeah, I know I've been touching on what I like to call those questions that we kind of, you know, teeter on whether we should be talking about them or not. But I'm not going to push any really deep ones. But one more about that, and then I'm gonna let the audience have you. But what it was is, have you ever? Okay, two things I wanted to ask you, actually. One, have you ever any contactees describe like glass rooms on a ship or a weird color blue? Go ahead.
Can you say glass rooms?
Yeah, anything with glass. Sometimes they're like glass rooms or glass tubes. I've had quite a few contactees tell me about what looks to be like suspended animation tubes, but anyway, I'll let you answer that. Go ahead.
I've had people describe something that looks like crystals in the middle of a room. Sometimes a very large one where you could, it's big enough for one person to get inside. Some have described the ceiling of one of the rooms as honeycomb, having a honeycomb look and crystal-like. So I've had some descriptions of glass or crystal.
I was just curious, and anything about a weird blue color? I have a lot of contactees that have this weird blue in their head, but that's why I was asking you.
Well, mainly when, you know, a bright light does shine on them, say, in their room when, on the onset of an abduction, it's a blue-white light many times.
Oh, one more thing. I got to ask you this for the audience. I've seen you scroll by, and this is a really good question. This is a friend of ours from London asking this. He wants to know if you've ever felt frightened during one of your sessions.
I'm sorry, say that again?
He wanted to know if you ever felt frightened, you know, scared during one of your sessions.
Have I felt frightened?
Uh-huh.
Well, I've been, you know, at times startled, especially in the very beginning when I opened up my practice. You know, I've had, you know, male clients who are, you know, 6'5", and I'm 5'1", you know, jump off my couch because they're experiencing or re-experiencing their abduction. But I pretty much, over the years, have been able to, you know, give or handle those types of situations where I know now I have them listen to my voice, concentrate on my voice, and as they do, then they calm down. And, you know, you use different techniques. A skilled hypnotherapist will use different techniques to allow the person to experience or relive their abduction without feeling the terror or the fear that they did when they were actually, you know, in the original experience. But yes, I've been startled a few times, like I said, in the beginning of my practice, and, you know, hearing all of these things, all of these different experiments and examinations that people go through, and, you know, you just, as you're gathering information, you just, you know, you just kind of put it, you know, put them aside until you start hearing case after case after case, and which has happened in the last 15 years.
You know, I know after when you first got started on this and you're listening to people, and you, some of these people you can tell are pretty interesting people, and you kind of wonder what's going through their head or why. And then I guess after you hear it enough or you hear enough of the same things, you start to realize this is really real. I know a couple of people I've talked to that worked in the field that are not contactees. When they realized it, you know, they were doing it because they thought they were helping, but, you know, they didn't know if it was real or if it was something fake or if it was some kind of new syndrome or something that these people were suffering. But I noticed when I talked to them and they realized it was real, it even changed their lives in ways that they're still not willing to talk about in their therapist. So I was kind of like, you're kidding me, right? You're not willing to talk about it? But anyway, Yvonne, I know we got a bunch of people waiting to ask you questions, and I've been hogging you all night. So let me get some of these questions out of the way. I see we have Quickon's hand up first. So, Quickon, why don't you give us your first name and location, and you're live and on the air with Yvonne Smith.
Thank you, JoJo. Larry, near Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Very briefly, Yvonne Smith, fascinating interview. This has been an exciting hour and a half so far. Your expertise, you are a scientist, neurological scientist. You use hypnotic therapy or hypnotic procedures as tools. My question is simply this. Have you or will you use such tools as psychotronic drugs and serums, for example, or transcranial electrical pulses, ECT? These could be tools that, well, that's my question. Very happy to be here. Thank you.
Go ahead, Yvonne.
I think the question was, would I be willing to use?
Yeah, you want to know if you have or if you would or if you have used those type of things with our patients.
No, I have not used. I'm not qualified to use anything but my, you know, training in hypnotherapy. I feel if a person wants to, you know, try these other avenues, and they have credible, qualified people to do it, then I feel, you know, if that's what they want to do to try to find more answers, they can. You know, they're certainly welcome to do it. I'm just in my work. I don't use any kind of drug, and it's not necessary. With a skilled hypnotherapist, you can get the information from your client, because it's where you're getting the information, and what using hypnotherapy is, it's deep. This information, or memories, or, you know, hidden memories are well within the subconscious mind, and the subconscious mind's job is to protect us whenever we suffer a traumatic event, whatever it is, and that's including an abduction experience. So when the person is ready, and these bits and pieces of memory that come forward, that start coming forward, is an indication that a person is getting ready to explore what may have happened. A skilled hypnotherapist can get the information without using any kind of, you know, sodium amytal or any kind of drugs, to help the client. And I, like I said, I've been doing this for many years, and I have been, you know, very successful in dealing with even the most difficult client.
I'm glad you don't, you know, and I'm glad to hear that too, because I actually don't see any need for drugs or anything like that in this if you know what you're doing. And I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, that's my own personal view. Who we got up next? Blue Draconian 3. Interesting name. Blue, why don't you come up, give us your first name and location, and you're live and on the air with Yvonne Smith.
Thank you. This is Nicole. I'm from Tennessee. I called earlier. Anyway, this is my question for you. Since you've done a lot of research with abductees and people explaining their cases, one thing that I do understand is a lot of them are similar. They all have the same kind of outlooks, you know, like they describe the alien the same or the ship and everything the same. And one thing that I've always questioned about that is from a young age we're exposed to a lot of media. We see it on TV, we read it in books, and a lot of people who have abduction cases is usually completely opposite of what they're used to seeing. And a lot of people are extremely afraid to talk about the truth because they're worried and paranoid about what other people think. And, you know, I was wondering what happens if you have, like, a case that sounds totally opposite of from what you're used to hearing. Do you completely, you know, throw it out the window saying that, you know, since 99% of these cases are this and yours, you know, couldn't possibly relate, do you just totally disregard those cases or do you actually take a look at those as well? Because, you know, of course people are going to, you know, try to stick to the same kind of guideline because that's what they're used to seeing. You know, if someone sees, you know, spirits or something abnormal like that, usually they'll tell, you know, their parents, like young children, oh, I see angels or, oh, I see this. So it sounds better so that they know their parents aren't going to, you know, look at them like, you know, they're crazy. Have you had cases like that? And if you have, like, what do you do with those? Do you believe them? How do you do with those?
Well, doing research, the reason we do research is we want answers. We want to try to get to the truth. So, no, I do not dismiss out of hand if I hear something, you know, completely left field. Like I said, when I began getting the cases with the beings that looked like they were wearing Dracula capes, I just put it on the back burner until I could get together with my colleagues and, you know, ask if they had cases similar, and, you know, they did. And I thought these cases were very strange. So when if I hear something that is not the norm, you know, the norm in abductions, I guess that's an oxymoron, but if I hear out of the norm, then again I will put that on the back burner until I hear it again and it begins to establish a pattern. Because again, no one has definite answers to this whole abduction mystery. So if we were to dismiss, you know, cases because we think this is really strange, you know, this doesn't fit. And again, you know, we want to put it in a neat little box, but in this type of work, you can't put it in a neat little box. We have to look on all different directions. I mean, it boggles my mind. I've been doing this for 15 years that, you know, we are still coming out with more questions than answers. So, again, if I hear something different, I will put it on the back burner until I could meet with my colleagues or I start hearing it from other cases. So I hope that answers your question, Nicole, and thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a tough one because, you know, in honesty, you know, we can't divert attention against something that may be a maybe. Even though I agree, I mean, we track all of that stuff. We keep it listed and logged, and, you know, I'll usually, because you can judge a person's character enough to know if this is real to them or not. And that's kind of important. If it's real to them, then, you know, it is worth logging. If it's something that just may be a fantasy, it's not. And when you've been doing this a long time, it's not as hard to tell as you think it is. Let's see who we got up next. Let's see. Instant Karma, why don't you come up, give us your first name and location, and you're live and on the air with Yvonne Smith.
Hi, I'm Jason from Texas, and, okay, my question is, I haven't listened to the show in its entirety, and I hope I'm not being redundant here, but, basically, how are people referred to you that have questions involving any types of abductions? Are they referred to you by other researchers? Are they referred to you by more traditional, I guess you could say, health professionals? Or do they come out and find you? And there's also another question that I have to pass on from Tex. The Treaties would like to know, have you ever had a reason to think that at any time the government has been watching you and your work over the years? Seems like an interesting one, and I just couldn't pass up.
Okay, thank you. I get referrals over the years from traditional therapists, from psychologists, psychiatrists, you know, regular MDs, also from other researchers, colleagues, and of course, when I've done shows over the years, like this one, people will call in to the producer and ask my contact information, because something I've said may have triggered something within them, and they want to look into it. So it's just, you know, over the years I have, it's just on my work is on a referral basis. And the second question, I'm sorry, Joe, what was the second part of that question?
I kind of caught half of it and didn't catch the other half myself. Instant, can you hear us there? Why don't you come back up to the mic and re-ask it, the second part there? Yeah, we still got enough time. You want to try it again? Give me a one in text. Yeah, go ahead. The mic is yours. Go ahead, Instant.
Yes, the treaties that asked this question in text in the room, and basically it was, at any time during your work involving abductees, have you had any type of, I don't know, government experiences, or has the government seemed to take any type of interest in your work? You know, have the MIBs ever came and knocked on the door?
Okay, that's what it was. I'm sorry, I just drew a blank on your second question. I was trying to answer the first one, you know, but no, you know, for the last 15 years, you know, I have not had a problem with, I feel, any type of government official. I'm not saying, you know, they have such technology now that my phone can certainly be tapped. The FBI may have a file on me because of the work I do. But I believe it's because, you know, I'm not delving into government documents. I'm not filing Freedom of Information requests. I think that's why they pretty much leave me alone. You know, they could dismiss me like she's just one of the kooks, you know, dealing with abduction cases, and that's fine. Leave me alone so I can do my work. So I really have not had a problem, you know, with anyone asking questions or coming around, you know, trying to find out what I'm up to. And, you know, if they do want to tap my phone and if they do have a file on me, I think they're going to be pretty bored. I mean, I'm a hypnotherapist and I do my work and, you know, I don't have a hidden agenda. So, Jason, I hope that answers your question, and thank you very much.
Yeah, and that's important, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I would think they have a file on all the ufologists who've been working in the field for any length of time, especially working with contactees. But really and truly, you know, we say that all the time. It would be really boring life if you had to sit there and listen to all my phone conversations. You know, we got about 5 minutes. I'm going to try to sneak in one more question because I see Joe in Florida has his hand up. So, Joe, if you got a question, Javon, why don't you come on up and ask your question?
Well, hello, Yvonne. My question is this. Simply, after receiving treatments, do these people cease to have contact with these ETs, or does it just help them cope with it? Thank you.
Thank you for your question. It really does help them cope with what's been happening to them their entire lives. The experiences do not stop. Sometimes they escalate. You know, somehow these abductors will know when they're delving into it or maybe perhaps thinking about having an implant removed from their bodies. Sometimes it does escalate. But I feel that if I can get them to incorporate this into their daily lives, I don't make any promises that I can take it away, but I can certainly make them feel better. I give them hope. There are many other people who are experiencing these things, and, you know, they start attending the CIRO support group meetings, and, you know, I've seen growth within my clients, and that's I feel I've done my job.
Yeah, it's a rewarding job. Do you find it to be rewarding, Yvonne?
My work rewarding?
Yeah.
I find it to be extremely rewarding. I mean, it can be, you know, very draining when you're trying to battle with the debunkers out there and, you know, people that are still insisting on making fun of it. But, you know, I do see the positive changes in the people that I work with, and that's where I find it to be very rewarding. I'm going to be in the process of writing my book, and should be out by next summer. And this is a compilation of some of my cases, explanation about hypnosis, and I am hoping that, you know, by reading this book, it'll help many people out there.
Well, I'll be one of the first ones to get it, so just let me know when it's out. Give me a little heads up. You can come tell everybody in the show, and we'll all read it together.
Well, that's great.
Yvonne, I want to tell you thanks for being on. I know we're getting really short on time. You are always a great guest. You're always welcome here anytime you want to come on. I enjoyed the conversation immensely. I know the audience did because I've been watching the virtual text go by and the virtual auditorium text go by, and they absolutely loved it. You want to tell them where they can find you at email or website or anything like that?
It's www.ysmith.com, and it's yvonne@ysmith.com for my email.
And remember, ladies and gentlemen, you can find it both on the Stardust Radio site and on the iCar site. She's listed on both sites. If you're in her area and you're having a contact and you need someone to talk to, I'd suggest you give her a call. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, we're just about out of time, so I want to mention Richard Dolan will be on the show next week. He will also be at the Crash Retrieval Conference in Vegas, along with myself and several other people who will be there working press. And for the next few weeks leading up to the conference, we will be having several of their guests on, including Ryan Wood will be coming on to talk about the conference and things that they're going to be doing and things that they can expect. You can expect to see while you're at the conference. And, yes, there will be several ICAR members present at this conference. Some of us working, some of us this day vacationing. Actually, I will be working, but some of us will be there vacationing. Again, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank everyone for listening to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo, and until next week, have a good week.
If you would like to continue this discussion after the show, join us in ICAR's Pal Talk chat room, UFO Alien Phenomenon, under the Social Issues category.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mymbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
We're here today with Paul Dow of Timeshares Only. And, Paul, you've got some terrific news for timeshare owners.
That's right. In the next 6 months, over $3.5 billion of timeshares will be sold.
So this is the perfect time to sell.
Exactly, which is why you need to get your property into our network. And if you call us right now, you'll also get a $500 shopping spree absolutely free.
$500 free?
Yes. Just for posting your property with Timeshares Only. And when you do sell your property, you'll get cash. It's a double bonus. You can't lose.
Except if I don't call. Hey,
over 10 million people will be looking to buy a timeshare. So we need your property now.
The number to call now is 1-800-921-0866. That's 1-800-921-0866. Turn your timeshare into cash and get a free $500 shopping spree.
And if our lines are busy, please keep calling.
That number again for timeshares only is 1-800-921-0866. That's 1-800-921-0866.
Alexa Parkin, your aviation destination.
You need something grand, something special, something unique. Look no further than the Alexis Park Inn of Iowa City. There you'll find 27 supersized suites of all varieties, most with jacuzzis. The Alexis Park Inn is an aviation-themed hotel where your continental breakfast is delivered right to your door because they're committed to your satisfaction. Give the Alexis Park Inn a call toll-free at 888-9-ALEXIS or check out alexisparkinn.com.
Alexis Park Inn. Your aviation destination, Alexis Park Inn.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
SRN 1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.